Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
Alright, what's good, world? It's your boy, Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey.
Yeah.
Back again. Episode 50, man.
Wow.
It's been quite the year.
And what a number 50 will be. I feel like this is going to be a good episode. Nice landmark episode here, number 50.
Yeah.
Heading into a good weekend.
Having properly introduced my boy, Abe Schwatterin. Abe, how you feeling, sir?
A.k.a. Abraham Lincoln Bio. Feeling good, man. We had a hot stretch of podcasts here and excited to keep it going.
Yeah, man. It's like kind of unbelievable. I don't know. I was doing some just thinking about how this whole thing started with you and I literally just like staring at each other.
I remember the first podcast. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it was god awful. And the only person who commented on it was basically like, y'all are trash and curse too much. So
yeah,
we cleaned it.
I don't think you could pay me. Like, I don't know how much I'd have to get paid to listen to that full first episode again.
I'd rather die than listen to that. So, you know, definitely came a long way. Still got a long way to go. But
yeah, and welcome to any of our new listeners
as
well.
Word. But so, you know, NBA season is now over. You know, we got.
Can you even believe that, first of all? This season went by so fast.
It always does. I was thinking, again, I was reminiscing. We've been doing a lot of reminiscing lately that, you know, you and I have basically been covering the NBA for, what is it, six years now?
Sixth NBA season. Five and a half if you count the lockout shortened first one.
Damn, man. So,
yeah.
You know, really, my 20s flew by. Maybe I'm having like a,
<This guy.
laughs> a midlife crisis of sorts. But anyway, you know, we got a dope weekend ahead. You know, obviously, we're gonna talk about the NBA playoffs a little bit. But, you know, JBC is coming up this weekend out in Brooklyn at Barclays Center on Friday night. We're hyped for that, but yeah, just real quick, you know, obviously the brackets are out. You can go peep and break them down as you see fit. So I'm just curious, you know, what are you looking forward to most about the first weekend of the playoffs and the first round in general?
Well, the first thing, just because you said midlife crisis, I feel like, you know, one sort of storyline that's going to be, I think, interesting is, and I think I know where it's headed, but maybe not, is the whole Clippers thing, like with Chris Paul. I mean, is this sort of last incarnation of this Clippers squad? It feels like it will be, because I just don't see any way they get past Golden State, if they can even get past the Jazz in the first round. But to me, that's like, that's one that maybe people aren't talking about that I think is super interesting. Because I mean, where this could be Chris Paul's last playoffs with the Clippers, could be Blake Griffin's, could be all them guys. Like, he's really, you know, he's, speaking of midlife crisis, like, he's 31 years old. He's sort of, you know, never been past the second round. Like,
yeah,
that's one that I think is a little underrated. And then I think the other one is just Boston as a one seed in the East. I mean, shout out to Isaiah Thomas, our cover subject for Slam 208, the playoff preview. Go get that on newsstands now. You know, and we would have done that even without the expectation of the Celtics getting the one seed, but here they are, the one seed. You gotta, I mean, the way that the Celtics are coming into the playoffs versus the way that the Cavs are coming into the playoffs, you gotta be at least looking forward to a potential matchup there in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, and I mean, they had, outside of the last one, they had some pretty epic games this season, the Cavs and the Celtics, the last two seasons at that. But yeah, I mean, just to add a little bit to that Clippers Jazz, there's like crazy implications on both sides. I mean, you know, Gordon Hayward is obviously going to get paid this summer, but, you know, all eyes are going to be on that dude for that series. And then, you know, obviously, you know, I'm looking forward to Houston.
I was about to say
Oklahoma City.
We've done 5 or 6 minutes here and not even said anything about Russell Westbrook. Seems wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, I personally feel like the Rockets are going to win that series, but I would not be surprised if, you know, the Thunder on the back of Russell Westbrook just came out and won in like 5 or 6 games, just because he goes insane for all games they play. That's great.
I mean, yeah, that's the crazy thing is, like, Houston is supposed to be a championship contender, but I think no fan would even bat an eye if the Thunder won that series, just because of what Russ has done this season, which is kind of crazy.
So who's going to have more triple-doubles, him or Harden?
In the series?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great question. I think probably Westbrook why wouldn't Westbrook take it even up another notch?
I know. It's crazy to think that, like, we may not have even seen, you know, peak Westbrook yet.
That being said, there's probably things that happen during the regular season as far as, you know, guys letting him grab rebounds and stuff that you would hope as a Thunder fan, as far as winning games, might not happen in the playoffs.
Yo, so I was thinking about this because a lot of people are saying, like, he's stat padding and whatnot.
Right.
But if you got a chance to average a triple-double for a season, wouldn't you be doing the alleged same thing?
If you get a yeah, those are all people who have no chance of averaging
exactly.
a triple-double. It's not even like, oh, if you had the chance to get one extra rebound, it's like, dude, you will never have. Like, yeah, what he's doing is absurd. To nitpick at it is a little crazy.
Yeah, I was just last week when
imagine being like hating fun so much that you would nitpick at a guy averaging a triple double
when Dame had 56 last week,
59
last week, and I was just going through our IG comments.
Oh no! And don't ever do that.
Someone commented.
Why would you do that?
Someone commented 59 against the Jazz. Honestly, not that impressive. But oh, I was like, yo, you have literally zero NBA points to your name. Like, how could you ever say that?
I mean, we're veering off on a tangent here, but this reminds me that, like, it was a couple weeks ago, like maybe 2 weeks ago, Malik Beasley from the Nuggets got sent down to the D League, and he had some absurd stat line, like 35, 11, and 8 or something. And I'm just thinking, these NBA dudes, like, even to an average fan, a guy who's a quote-unquote scrub or a rookie who hasn't really done anything in his rookie season, can drop down one level basically and instantly be that good, put up a 35-11-8 line. Malik Beasley, who most NBA fans probably have no awareness of whatsoever. That, I mean, and I realize the D League is not, you know, one of the best Euro leagues or whatever, but come on, man. Like,
still, to go down
incredible.
For one game and be the best player in
incredible.
The league.
Incredible. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's insane.
Insane.
And real talk, though, how many games of the Spurs-Grizzlies series are you going to watch?
Probably like a solid quarter, potentially.
I know. I just have – I feel like we've seen this series so many times.
That's because we have seen this series so many times.
All right, then I'm not wrong. My memory serves me correct.
I mean, obviously different incarnations and different permutations. But, yeah, certainly people are going to be keeping way more eyeballs on the Houston-OKC series that's going to match up with whoever wins that one.
Yeah, so Dame predicted Blazers in six against the Warriors. What
I
kind of
love that.
Yeah.
Why not?
I loved it when Jennings did it a couple years ago when he said they were going to beat the Heat.
Of course you should say it. Yeah, just say it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, then if you're right, you'll be remembered forever as being that dude. It's like Joe Namath. Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame because he basically, I mean, yeah, he had a good career, but predicted that the Jets would win a Super Bowl.
I also like that he said in six because he's like, yeah, we'll probably lose two games. Not like, yeah, we're going to sweep. Very, like, almost rational. You know what I'm saying? Like, say in six is, like, almost rational. But I love it. Like, all of his teammates got to be like, hell yeah, man. Let's go.
I love it too, man. I mean, I feel like, look, if you're in the playoffs, you gotta, you know, at least ball out and believe in yourself.
Not to
mention, made it this far.
I mean, I didn't see the context of where that quote came from.
No, he said it. I think after the game.
Okay, but was he asked or
I don't know.
Did he just come up with it? Because this could be easily another situation of like guys just having a microphone in their face at all times and someone asking like, hey, do you think you're going to win? Well, yeah, of course.
I know, like,
it's the same as Lonzo Ball saying he'll go number one in the draft or he's better than Markelle Fultz. What do you want him to say? Like, no?
I bet it was after the game and he was asked in like the post-game interview that plays over the arena.
Right.
And
like, are you ready for the Warriors? Tell the fans. What's he going to say? Like, well, they're like the one seed and been to the finals two straight years, so I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, we'll probably get smacked. So, props to him. And hopefully, I hope Nurkic plays. I admittedly don't know what his status is, but
he's, friend of the podcast.
Dude, arguably my favorite player in the NBA, just based on him coming to the office for one day.
Blazers in six or seven. Blazers in six. Blazers in six. That confident. All right. Well, best of luck this coming weekend as the series begins.
But looking at the East, what do you think about your Wiz, man?
I mean, I feel semi-confident. I was feeling a lot more confident before today, walking in the office and having some discussions about about the Hawks and
the
Wizards.
The post Ryan Nelson conversation got you thinking a little bit?
Yeah, Ryan's got me in my brain a little bit.
He tends to do that.
In my feelings, too, actually. Really came hurting my feelings this morning. Was riding high about the Wiz. It kind of bothers me that the Wizards are like the trendy dark horse pick amongst all media, mm-hmm. because that typically always spells bad things for whatever team that is, in particular as it relates to Washington, D.C. teams. But, I mean, this team is certainly, I think, built to beat the Hawks for sure, and then I think they may even match up better against the Celtics just because of, you know, the emotion that's behind that matchup we've seen this season.
We need that series.
Exactly.
We need that as fans.
The funeral this year. Yeah. There's just a lot going on there. So, yeah, I hope we get to see that. And then however the Eastern Conference Finals shakes out, that'll be great too. I mean, the Cavs are arguably sputtering, you know, coming into the playoffs. So, I mean, I think it's a good bracket, man. We're going to have a great weekend here leading off the NBA playoffs. It's about damn time. I mean, it almost feels like the last couple of weeks of the regular season just waiting around for the playoffs to start, and then we get a real rejuvenation here to start it off.
The last, 20 games of the NBA season just drags, and the last week when all the random players start coming out and playing, it just, just feels unnecessary.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, one note on Cleveland, they are kind of stumbling into the playoffs as much as a defending champion can. But, you know, if they come out and they sweep Indiana, everyone's going to be singing Absolutely. Such a different tune. So, you know, things can change so fast.
Also, we're recording this on a Thursday, so TBT to the day that Kyle Korver got traded to the Cavs and everyone said, oh, my God, they're going to win the title.
I never bought into that.
That seals it. They're going to win the title. Like, Kyle Korver to the Cavs, it's over.
Yo, our boy Eddie Tavares, though, in the cut?
Yeah. Beast. But anyway, it's just like, okay, do you guys even remember that Korver is on the Cavs at this point?
I honestly forget often.
Right, exactly. So I mean,
they're rolling out quite the squad. Like, Deron Williams, Kyle Korver. It's like, this is,
if this was 2006, it would be a hot unbelievable. Yeah. It'd be no question who's winning the title. Anyway, I mean, I think we should talk Jordan Brand Classic.
Yeah, totally.
One of our favorite events of every year, actually, continues to grow and just be basically, for us, like the preeminent high school event of the year every year.
Yeah, I mean, it's at Barclays Center Friday night, so, you know, pull up if you're in the area. Get a chance to see, you know, future stars. I mean, we were talking the other day, and, you know, we kind of had the realization that a lot of these kids are literally a year away from being in the NBA, which is just, you know, wild to think about. These are 17-year-old kids, and literally 8 or 14 months from now, they're going to be like the top 10 picks in the NBA draft.
Yeah, I mean, last year we saw Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox and a lot of guys that are going to be in this year's draft. Like, literally 1 year ago from right now, those were the guys playing in last year's game, which was awesome. I mean, I think the cool thing about the Jordan Classic now is that a lot of events, a lot of sneaker-branded events, and even to that extent, a lot of AAU events, there's a lot of sort of hype, and it becomes larger than the basketball a lot of the time. Jordan Brand Classic is still, for all intents and purposes, about the games, mm-hmm. multiple. You know, you got the international game, the local game. Thankfully, now we have a girls' game as well, which is in its infant stages, you know, third year. And then, you know, you got the national game, and super dope. Like, there's not a lot of extra. It's you know, these are the guys that you're going to see basically at the top colleges and potentially even the NBA, like you said, within 12 months, 18 months. And that's what people are there to see, and it's really dope.
Yeah, and I mean, while you say, like, they don't make a spectacle of it, the game itself, just from, like, sitting in the stands, is, you know, a spectacle in itself.
Well, yeah.
The amount, I mean, it's just hilarious, like, from people watching perspective.
Totally.
There's celebrities there. There's wannabe celebrities there. You know, everybody's out, got their phones out, just taking pictures. Like, it's almost hard to focus on the game because there's just so much stuff going on in the stands.
Yeah, you see everyone from, I think, Joel Embiid, Melo typically makes an appearance, rappers, you know, former NBA players, other fellow high school guys will just wander in randomly.
Yeah,
there's definitely a lot going on.
And then last year, Abe and I were sitting with a guy who was FaceTiming with his boy during the whole game and basically like looped us into the conversation somehow. So we were having like a four-way call with some person, some two people we'd never met in our lives.
Yeah, and that guy actually like followed me onto the court after the game and like I guess like finagled his way around security or something. And then I have a picture on my phone of him taking a selfie on the court after the game as like the MVP trophy is being handed out.
No, so. I think we found his Instagram the next day. He had like pictures with designer and everything.
Real legend. Yeah, Rick Ross and A Boogie performing this year. There's always like a hot performance. It's crazy. 4 years ago, Drake was actually the performance after the game, which, I mean, A, shows you the power of Jordan Brand, and B, shows you how much Drake has blown up in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Imagine Drake, if Drake was the post-JBC performance this year, they could sell out the entire Barclays Center and people would be there hours early just for Drake.
I mean,
a lot could happen
like,
kind of
say the
years,
same
man.
For Rick Ross. Anyway, that's not the point of this conversation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we're very
nice. But, I mean, just looking at the roster, who are you looking forward to seeing most?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, our guy Mo Bamba,
yeah,
for sure. Matt
Porter,
Coleman,
yeah,
Billy Preston. I mean, all these guys.
I know.
Honestly,
I'm looking most forward to seeing. Well, obviously Porter. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, hopefully he's going to play. I was reading this week that his back is bugging him, so
yeah,
hopefully
he's
going to play.
Yeah, he's been sitting out a couple practices and taking it easy, but.
But I love Trey Duvall, undeclared point guard. Obviously. You know, Matt Coleman, who we got to see in New Orleans, who's just an awesome kid all around, and not to mention a great ball player. But DeAndre Ayton, I've never seen play, so I'm looking forward to seeing him play. And yeah, Colin Sexton, it really, I really like that kid a lot, man.
Yeah.
From Alabama.
Been shooting up the ranks, too.
Yeah. So, and then Trey Young, obviously, and then I'm interested to see Tremont Waters, who I've never seen play before, who just decommitted from Georgetown. So, you know, I'm interested to see what he's got, too. But anyway, you know, you had the privilege of going to check out – was it practice or they just had, like, a welcoming event?
Essentially, you know, on the Tuesday before the Friday games, Jordan Brand hosts the equivalent of, like, an opening ceremony for Jordan Brand Week for all of the Jordan Brand All-Americans, international, boys, girls, and they – all meet up, they get kind of like the, you know, the rundown of what's going to happen from Jordan Brand, and then they also get the chance to talk to both Ray Allen and Maya Moore, obviously Jordan Brand athletes and two legends in the NBA and WNBA, and they kind of give them like a speech at first, but then they also get to interact individually, you know, as you can imagine, the top high school players in the country like all gravitate towards Ray Allen. They want to ask him a million questions, get their selfies popping, maybe get, you know, a couple of seconds of advice. Same goes for Maya, for the girls and boys for that matter. So yeah, just getting to interact with, you know, a couple career NBA and WNBA players that they probably look up to. And you know, I was fortunate enough to get a couple minutes with both Maya and Ray, and yeah, they were great. I mean, I had this same conversation with Ray last year at the opening ceremonies for the 2016 game, and that was a great conversation. And you know, I was just continuing that conversation this year and asking him about his MVP pick, which he's since changed over the last 6 weeks or so. Just asking him, you know, both Ray and Maya, what they try to impart on the kids when they get a chance to speak to them in situations like this. And, you know, obviously hit on some relevant NBA and WNBA topics while we're at it.
So real talk, did you ask Ray about what Rondo said, that he's not getting invited?
You know, I wouldn't be doing my job properly if I didn't allow him the chance to speak on it. I didn't put it so directly, but I kind of just floated it to him and let him sort of take it from there. And you'll hear that at the tail end of our interview. You'll also hear that he plays pickup basketball on the weekends with what sounds like an amazing, legendary crew of former NBA and overseas guys. So, I mean, honestly, seeing Ray Allen in person, there's 100% chance that he could contribute to a playoff team right now.
Mm. Word. So let's get into these interviews. You know, we'll be back next week, talk about playoffs, JBC, how the night went, and you know, we got a special pod next week with a couple of relevant rappers that we're looking forward to putting out there. So yeah, let's get into it. We'll be back next week. Peace.
All right, I'm joined now by two-time NBA champion, NBA all-time leader in career three-pointers made, future Hall of Famer, legendary sneakerhead, Ray Allen, a.k.a. Jesus Shuttlesworth. You just got a mob scene out there, man. What's it like with all the Jordan Brand classic kids here? And what's the first thing they say to you of all those things I just mentioned? What's the first thing they say?
Well, I think when they initially see me, first thing they say is Jesus. You know, a lot of those kids now weren't even born almost when He Got Game first came out. No, they weren't born. So it's so much information, I think, for them. You know, when you walk into this amazing room with Jordan models and everybody's got Jordans on their feet, and you know, they just were given 6 or 7 pair of shoes, and
right.
You know, this experience is like over the top. And then you walk into a room and you see, you know, Maya Moore for the young women, and then me, people who have kind of walked in those shoes that they hope to walk in someday. I don't know how I would have felt about it, because the first thing I think about is anybody great that I've ever grew up watching, like, it takes you back. It's just, you start to relive those moments, you know, sitting on the couch when somebody did something, or where you were when they won a championship. So I can only imagine what those kids feel when they walk into a room and they see myself and Maya. I ask each one of them where they're from when they're going to college, because
yeah.
It is. It's fun for me to listen, because they're all like young people trying to be on their way.
Now, one of the stories that you told them was about Slam, actually, mm-hmm. and about Slam magazine, the 96 draft class cover, probably the most famous Slam cover there is, besides maybe an Allen Iverson cover along the way. But that seems to have stuck with you even, you know, 20 plus years. So could you just tell me that story again and why it meant so much to you?
You know, that I was just on the verge of, you know, going into the NBA, and I remember we had rookie orientation, I think that's where it was. I forgot where we were. We might have been in New Jersey.
It's like the rookie photo shoot.
Yeah,
right?
And so we did a photo shoot, and we didn't understand the significance of it at the moment, but we all did individual shots, and, you know, we did that one photo, and I remember when the magazine came out, there was accolades of everybody on the inside. And, you know, I'm just a kid just still hanging on. I don't know what my imprint is going to be on NBA. I was just like, am I going to be good enough? What's the deal here? And so, you know, you don't realize, like, everybody that's here in this draft class has the opportunity. Somebody's going to win the NBA championship. Somebody's going to be an MVP. Somebody's going to be a scoring champ. It's just a matter of how well we adapt, adjust, deal with the adversity, and move on. And, you know, when I came across, I'm just kind of scrolling down, where's my name?
Right.
And then I see my name, and I look beside, and it said, I'm most likely to fade into obscurity. And I know, like, it really angered me, because, you know, nobody had seen any upside of me, I guess, going into that class, that draft class. So I was, you know, for the first 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 or 6, I was off Slam. You know, I was always like, you know, those MFs.
Yeah.
You know, because they
Russ Banks in particular, sounds like.
Yeah, and then I grew up, and I realized that is what makes me who I am, who made me, one of the things that made me who I am, like, to for anybody to say anything good about you doesn't really, like, propel you forward. It's the negative stuff. And so it just kind of focuses you even more. So, you know, the first couple years of my career, I was like, it was the worst. But then now, you know, from Seattle on, it was like, it's one of the blessings, because, you know, I was working.
Right.
I was like on a mission to prove that I wasn't going to fade into obscurity. And no matter what happened, I was like, I'm still going to be out here hooping and doing my thing, and I'm going to be in shape better than everybody else, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I'm not going to just fall, you know, victim to obscurity. I was going to do something myself. I was going to be reputable and and make my mark. And it was all because of that magazine.
So when you get a chance now to share some of your story or share some message, even for a brief moment, with some of these kids here that are in the class of 31, the Jordan Brand Classic, what are, even if you only have their attention briefly, what are some of the most important things that you want to try to impress on them?
Well, there's so much. I feel like I talked to a couple of kids in there extensively in the small time that I was in there, and it was like, listen, you know, no matter, you know, whatever college you're going to, you can make it the best place for you or the worst place for you. You know, if you don't succeed, it's going to be up to you. You know, the coach, you can blame the coach, you can blame a teammate, you can blame anything. But the choice is going to be yours to succeed. Like, how do you fall into the traps of college life? I said, you have the opportunity to make it all about you. You know, being a part of a team, growing, learning, being successful, working hard. But you have that choice. I said, everybody in this room is the same. The special ones are the ones that end up doing everything that everybody else is not willing to do.
Right.
And that's your choice. So a couple of them, that's what I told them. I said, we'll hear from you or we won't. But the only reason why you know who I am is because I was one of those ones that just didn't accept mediocrity.
It seems, you know, just from an outsider's perspective, like, you know, having Jordan's name attached to this, obviously, you seem like someone that really has, throughout your career, you know, took on that kind of Jordan-esque work ethic. And being a Jordan athlete, maybe you felt even more of a responsibility to that. So how much is that true, and does that play in at all to this weekend and this event?
I always, you know, I've kind of mirrored, you know, my actions around MJ. He was the bar, the example. How he did press conferences, how he dressed in press conferences, how he carried himself on the court. Like, he was, in my career, he was the greatest competitor I ever seen. But he didn't do it through anger. He just did it through competition. Like, he can talk trash to you, but he didn't dislike you. He respected you. He went at you. He wasn't afraid to give you a compliment, but he could still go at you. So I always tried to think about my perception, how people perceive me, and I tried to give that image off that he gave off to people around him that I got from looking at him.
Now, obviously, people want to know about, you know, your sneaker collection as well. And we know you're not playing anymore, but I'm sure you get out there from time to time. What's kind of your go-to, you know, basketball sneaker now when you get a chance to work out?
Well, I typically play on the weekends, and I've been wearing the 30, the 31s.
Well, first of all, where are you playing? Are you just shooting around? Or are you playing in some kind of rec league?
No, I play actually at my son's school. We have a couple guys Saturdays and Sundays that play, and we have 15 to 20 guys. You know, Carlos Arroyo plays, Jamal Mashburn plays.
Wow.
We've had Charlie Villanueva out there play a couple times. You know, a couple guys that Quincy Doobie, like a couple guys that have played, you know, in league. And then, you know, some guys in the neighborhood that just play in college that can shoot and play really well. So it's great because it keeps me just kind of in my zone, you know, shooting and running up and down the floor. And I tell you, I learned, like, the first couple of times I went, I'd wake up on a Saturday or Sunday morning to go to the gym and start hooping. No stretch, nothing. I was like, who am I? I've never done this in my career. And then I started realizing, I was like, this is what I do. So now I go to the gym in my neighborhood, I work out, because we'll hoop at 8, so I'll go there at 7, lift, stretch, and go right to the gym and play basketball. And that's kind of been my routine my whole career. So it now, you know, I've found somewhat of a good rhythm, and it keeps me feeling good about myself.
So, you know, at any point in there, I mean, we know you're retired, you're 41 years old, Is there any, even when you make one shot, you're like, ooh, I could still like get out there if someone gave me a call this season? Is there any, even for 1 second, any temptation?
Of course I can get out there and play. There's no question about it. I was in Barcelona for JBC in Spain, and I shot threes against the kids. We had a little competition, and one of the kids came to me and says, Alan, how come you're not in the NBA anymore? Why is this? What is this? Like, I don't know where he's from, but he just couldn't believe it. Because I actually took my shirt off because I don't like shooting with anything in my arms. And he was like, this guy's in shape. Like, he still shoot? Why is he not still shooting in the NBA? It's different when you get older. There's so many different variables that come into play. So I just love the fact that I can do things on my terms, and you know, I'm able to spend time here and be an ambassador for the brand like I've been over the last couple of years. I mean, for the last, my career, I've been an ambassador, but now it's kind of changed roles where I can actually see the kids, you know, right, on their ascension to hopefully to their greatness. Like, I've watched some of the kids, I was here last year, and I've seen some of the kids play, you know, their games this year. Like, the kid from Boston was here last year. He plays in Miami. Oh, I forgot his name. He's from Boston, point guard. He was here last year. Yeah, he had a great season. Like, he was good this year. They beat Duke at their last home game. I can't remember his name, but just to be able to be here with the kids and kind of push them through some information, some knowledge. They will never remember it, but in their mind, their minds will, you know, it'll set them in a certain direction. And that's what this is all about.
Yeah, but I feel like you could still stand in the corner for, like, OKC with Russ doing it.
I'm not a stand in the corner person. That's the problem is, you know, I always try to, like, I'll get myself in shape to do whatever I need to do to be out there and to really play and to really help a team. You know, when I was talking to teams, you know, last year, you know, they're like, well, what do you see? Are you curious? Would you be a veteran, you know, sit the bench and, you know, help the young players? I was like, I keep myself in shape because I want to play. I want to help. So there was never really, you know, it was, that's the fear is going somewhere and they're like, you know, I understand because it took me back to my rookie year when Ricky Pierce came to the team in Milwaukee. And at the time, Ricky was 38. And Ricky was like, I should be out there playing in front of that young fella. And so I just always remember that. I was like, you know, I was drafted and I'm ready to go. And so you understand organizations have to move on.
So we just mentioned Russ. He's another Jordan guy too. Would he be your pick for MVP? I know you liked Isaiah Thomas as of about a month ago. Has that changed at all?
Yeah, it changed. Russ is clearly the MVP. Hands down, I don't know how anybody else could get MVP. The man averaged a triple-double in the season. You know, shout out to everybody who's had a great year. You know, teams, or, you know, somebody's eventually going to win the NBA championship. But there's nobody that can knock what Russ has done in this league this year. We never thought it would be done again. Nobody thought anybody would ever average a triple-double. Like, he was getting triple-double, but the average one? Like, listen, you just have to just shake his hand and say, you know what, probably one of the best seasons from an individual player that anybody's seen in a very long time. And for that, that merits, you know, him winning MVP.
So, last question, we appreciate the time, obviously. You know, how much are you paying attention to sort of headlines and stuff that's out there, even, you know, as far as your name came up once this year, as far as Rondo making some comments about the Celtics? How much are you in tune with sort of the Twitterverse and what's going on in NBA news, stuff like that, with your name involved?
I don't pay attention to any of it. One thing that's beautiful about my life and the life that I've built for myself is I know the truth about who I am, and the only people that now I have to answer to are these two boys that you see, and I have three other children that are here. And when I got to the NBA, the one thing I wanted to do was just be reliable, show up every single day, do my job, and play as hard as I can. And we all do that in our own ways. So you know, I've had some great teammates, I've had some bad teammates. You know, that's just part of, you know, playing in the NBA. And so I'm just appreciative of being able to have gotten this far. And, you know, I'm still healthy, I can still move, I have a beautiful family, and that's all I focus on.
All right, Ray Allen, thank you so much for the time, man.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm joined now by three-time WNBA champion, finals MVP, regular season MVP, All-Star Game MVP. Am I missing anything? NCAA champion.
It's okay. Those will do.
All right, it's Maya Moore. Maya, thank you so much for joining us. You just spoke to, you know, the Jordan Brand Classic kids that are here this year, the class of 31. What are you trying to tell the kids when you get a chance to speak to them like that?
Well, I think the first thing that I always try to start off with is being grateful. And, you know, when I walked into the room where we had them hanging out, I just was thinking, wow, this is so amazing that they get a chance to enjoy, you know, this level of success, to enjoy the space to be able to be together and to enjoy where the game is now and you know, where they could potentially go. So I just try to, you know, stress to appreciate the moment, take advantage of the people and the time that you have to get to know the people that you're around, to learn and soak it in, but have fun, compete, you know, because that's what got you here is that competitiveness and obviously their talent.
And this is the third year that we've had a girls' game. So what does that, you know, mean to you and, you know, women's basketball in general to have, you know, the girls be an important part of the JBC?
Yeah, I think it's definitely time. You know, it's really awesome to be able to showcase, you know, the greater game of basketball. You know, nothing's missing now. I think it's such a complete weekend with, you know, the city guys, the international guys, and then the national girls and boys game. So it's just, it feels whole. It feels just, again, a chance to encourage the All-American girls that have been here and hopefully get them excited for the future. Not of just the brand, but the game of basketball.
And you were the first women's basketball endorser for Jordan. So do you feel like you have a special sort of responsibility related to what we just talked about, like to, you know, sort of continue that on for the girls?
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel like a trailblazer and have an exciting opportunity to really help create culture. It's kind of an overwhelming task at times, but it's fun. And, you know, to be able to have conversations with people in the Jordan family and talk about, hey, let's, you know, have a girls' game, let's figure this out, and seeing it happen while I'm still a player has just been really rewarding, and just to have my hands on that process has been really, really fun to pour my energy into that every spring. So it's a neat chance to be able to start something and to see it actually come to fruition.
Right. What's the first thing they say to you when, like, one of these kids will walk up to you and introduce themselves? What are some of the first things they're saying?
I get a variety of reactions, whether that's can't speak at all, the mouth drop, the phone come out, the hi, my name is. I think a couple of years ago, one young lady jumped on me.
Wow.
And she was a post player. So it was you name it. I've seen the reaction, so it really makes me feel good to know that the girls are appreciative. And then you got the guys that are a little more laid back. They don't want to show how excited they are, but then they ask for
right.
a picture, and I'm like, it's okay, you can take a picture. And so those are moments when I'm like, I'm remembering they're 17. So it's really fun though.
All right, and then as far as, you know, Jordans, we got to talk sneakers a little bit.
Okay.
Obviously, you've had a couple of PEs that we've seen. Mm-hmm. What can we expect in the future? More of that? Is there any thoughts, any discussions about maybe a signature shoe at mm-hmm. some point? What are we looking at?
So discussions are always being had.
Okay.
So nothing is out of bounds, but there's going to be something special that the girls will receive. Keep your eyes open this week that we've been working on for them. And, you know, I've enjoyed playing in the 31, so this whole summer I have my hand on making the 31s my own. In different points in fun ways this season. So
cool.
We've been very intentional this summer to be even more creative with the 31s, and we'll see what happens.
And obviously, you know, talking about the Jordan 31, this is the class of 31.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about what that whole campaign is about, what your class is, and where
mm-hmm.
that sort of ties into the story that Jordan's telling this year?
Yeah, so, you know, one of my favorite pictures is his class, his senior class picture, you know, MJ himself. And just, I think it just, you know, when you have that bond of this is my class, and it's got that family feel of, you know, I identify with, you know, this year, this group of people, this shoe. It makes it special and more memorable. I was the class of 21. Before I was on the brand, I wasn't, you know, into the classes, but I can now say, looking back, I am class of 21. But class of 31 is super cool. I think just where the shoe is right now, with how it looks, the technology, how it feels, it's just a fun time to be in a Jordan class. So, you know, just going old school. It just goes back to the basics, that high school time of where you're learning, that work ethic, you're dreaming. So there's a lot of, I think, meaning that you can find in just being in, you know, in a class of, you know, whatever your year is.
All right, well, now that we got you here, you know, I got to ask a couple of basketball questions. I wasn't going to start with this, but obviously we're coming off of a pretty critical loss for UConn in the Final Four. Give me like the situation. How are you watching the game? What was your reaction and the aftermath for you?
So I was spending some time with my family during the semifinal game, and I am a terrible, terrible spectator of UConn women's basketball because I am a nervous wreck.
Okay.
And I scream at the TV. I'm helping coach through the TV. I'm helping the officials officiate. I'm encouraging the girls. I know they hear it all. So I'm pretty entertaining, according to my family and friends, when I watch UConn. But it was tough. You know, they had an amazing year, and just to maintain that level of excellence over that amount of time is just people. I don't really think words can describe how hard that is. I was a part of one, and I just have so much pride in what they're doing, what coach is doing, what the girls and the assistant coaches, because I know how hard that is.
Yeah.
So I watched it with all, you know, all of my emotion, and I was invested, and it hurt, but they will take it. That's one thing about UConn is they win a lot, but they don't waste losses.
Right. All right, who's your NBA MVP?
Ooh, NBA MVP, that's a great topic. I mean, obviously, Russell is playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
So I've never averaged a triple-double. Have you averaged a triple-double?
Maybe once in, like, fifth grade, but...
How many games in your season?
How many games? Probably, like, 9. And no one was actually... This is definitely not true, by the way.
I mean, the MVP award is one of those things that, as a player, you know, you obviously want to, if you were that caliber of a player, put yourself in that conversation, but ultimately you can't control it. I know as a player I can't control those things, but there's no doubt he's playing otherworldly this year, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, I like it, going with the fellow Jordan Brand guy.
It's a smart move. Even if I wasn't, it's otherworldly. Gotcha. And other players are doing amazing things. I mean, I'm a huge Kawhi fan as well, just because of, like, he'll go and have an MVP-like season and his facial expression doesn't change.
Right.
Like, he's just going out there, like,
right,
handling his business, and he's just a baller. So I enjoy watching, you know, the Spurs, and obviously Golden State are two teams that play in a way that I can relate to. Coming from, you know, a program like a UConn where it's just very, very team, very, you know, the culture of, you know. So I have a few people that I keep my eye on, but, yeah.
All right, you're rolling with Westbrook for the MVP. Cool. That's Maya Moore. Thank you so much for the time.